The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Richard Lee.
Guardian First Book Awards, 31st floor.
We're high above London at Centre Point to meet the winner of the 2014 Guardian First Book Award, a prize which brings together fiction and non-fiction, novels and short stories to find this year's most exciting debut. It's an award which has democracy at its heart, not only in the workings of a panel including Anne Enright, Tristram Hunt, Josh Cohen and Mary Beard, but also in the reading groups up and down the country who helped select the shortlist. Like this one, from Edinburgh.
I think this year it wasn't quite so... we weren't all in agreement about which book was the best. My personal favourite was Things to Make or Break. I thought that was just absolutely stunning. Couldn't believe it was somebody's first book. It was just so, just so unusual and so well written.
What the books do you think were muscling towards the top of the list?
For me, Young Skins started at the top and stayed there all the way through. My surprise one was Age of Ambition. I didn't expect to feel so positively towards that, and I loved it.
I think we all agree with both of those. Absolutely.
We're from Lewis. And what did you make of this year's shortlist? What was your favourite?
My favourite was The Night Guest. I found that it was really gripping and I didn't want to put it down.
I liked Young Skins because I thought the writing was really, really good and very interesting. It evoked the place very well in this small Irish town. And yeah, I thought it was excellent and he showed a lot of promise for writing more later.
So who do you think is going to win?
I think Young Skins will win. I think it's just the quality of the writing. It's just there's so much originality there and so much vibrancy in the description of the people that it really is a community in its own right, even though it's fictional. It feels very real.
But you're very much divided, aren't you? Do you think it was a difficult year this year to choose?
Quite happy with our shortlist that we came up with, and I think we all agreed that the books we wanted generally were in the top five, but I think we have different choices on who we actually want to win.
Colin Barrett is joined on the shortlist by Evan Osnes's Intimate Portrait of Contemporary China, Age of Ambition, Henry Marsh's Dissection of Life as a Brain Surgeon, Do No Harm, Fiona McFarlane's psychological thriller, The Night Guest, and Mei-Lan Tan's slippery collection of short stories, Things to Make and Break. But now it's time to find out the winner of the Guardian First Book Award 2014. And here comes Stuart Broome to announce the name.
The winning book this year contains some outstanding passages of tension, brilliance and beauty. It's the work of a writer who we felt in discussion already had very clear things to say about the world, a very defined vision. And we strongly believe that that writer would go on to create compelling visions of the world and dig deeper to create a sequence of better and better books. It gives me great pleasure to announce that the winner of this year's Guardian First Book Award is Colin Barrett for Young Skins.
Christ. I wasn't expecting this. I just want to thank everyone at The Guardian and the adjudicators, the judges, and the reading groups. I'm sure everyone had fun doing it, but it was a thankless task. But I think that they did a good job in the end. It's amazing. Thank you, everyone.
According to First Book Award judge Josh Cohen, a professor of literary theory and a practicing psychoanalyst, Barrett's talent was obvious to the panel.
I think a very worthy winner. Somebody whose prose is incredibly polished, it feels very fully formed, and somebody who also knows how to draw you into a story. There's a narrative intensity, there's a build, there's something about the gap between these very kind of dirty realist settings and the articulacy and sharpness of vision of the narrative voice that is actually an incredibly difficult tightrope act to walk, because it could come across as condescending, but instead it actually kind of elevates the vision of the characters and gives them a kind of multidimensionality, a complexity. It's a really assured, impressive collection.
And it's just so fresh. I mean, just the word-by-word bit of the language, it's so vibrant.
He is a sentence-by-sentence, an astonishing writer. One of the most natural writers I've come across in the last few years. It feels almost unfeasible that this is the first collection.
Yeah, there's violence and disaster always in the background, but some of the stories manage to veer off somehow towards some sort of tenderness, some kind of transcendence.
Transcendence is the word, isn't it? The centrepiece story of the collection, Calm with Horses, has this very redemptive ending, which is completely unexpected, because it follows this roller coaster domino effect cycle of violence, which is distressing, which is inexorable, and which is quite relentless. But it ends on this moment of calm and stillness, which is so unexpected and at once jarring and absolutely appropriate.
I'm wondering if short fiction is in some sense appropriate to measure up to life here and now.
There is something that feels very contemporary about the form, and that is reflected on the fact that there are two really impressive short story collections on the shortlist, quite different for sheer kind of polish and literary intelligence. The Barrett came off incredibly well, and yes, it feels like the form of the moment.
Publishers often see short stories as a difficult sell, but Young Skins clearly struck a chord with the First Book Award reading groups, according to Waterstone's Stuart Broom.
I think the thing that the Guardian First Book Award really encourages is for readers to really open their minds, and craftsmanship can seem a little bit of a pedestrian criteria. When you actually do look at something that's very well made, very well structured, that comes across. This is a writer who's very adept at creating all of the old-fashioned virtues: tension, plot, character, wonderful dialogue, great figures of speech that you've never read before. So once you have all of those, actually all of your preconceptions about format and maybe a less commercial kind of format tend to fall away under the weight of that brilliant technical virtue.
Barrett's short fiction first appeared in the Irish magazine Stinging Fly, whose editor, Declan Lee, remembers picking out a story from the slush pile. Do you remember, when was the first time you saw something by Colin?
It was 2009, I'm going to say, and it was a story, I think, called The Moon, and, you start off reading a first page of something, and then you forget that you're reading a submission, and that's what happens when you read someone really good. And you start to enjoy the sentences, or even before that you enjoy a couple of words placed here and there, and then you enjoy the paragraphs, and then you're getting a sense of story all the time. And you relax and you become what you want to be all the time, which is just a reader. And then you go, who the hell is this person? The satisfaction that comes from reading a story when you're wading through a lot of submissions that don't provide that, for all kinds of different reasons. So just to be in a safe pair of hands at that moment, it's great. And I mean, I think very quickly with Colin, on the basis maybe of that first story, we would have said, we will do a collection with you. So with Colin, for the first time, we were working literally, you know, building up a collection very slowly. And it did only get to 7 stories, fair enough. But there is one long, spectacular story within that. But yeah, I mean, it felt like a complete world had been made and a book had been made during that process. So
people have been trying to sum up that voice that he's struck all evening. How would you describe it?
I suppose... with great difficulty, I think there's an excitement about, you know, within the storytelling itself, and I think it's the kind of, you know, that he's relishing the act of telling you a story and using language in a way, and there's kind of a bravery in that simple thing of just I'm going to tell you a story and I'm going to tell you it in this way. And I'm going to throw all kinds of things in there in terms of linguistic kind of flourishes that perhaps I'm not supposed to be able to do, or, I, you know, this is not done, but this is what I'm going to do. And for the reader, just a sense of total enjoyment in watching somebody do that. But just also great stories and great emotional intelligence behind the stories, you know, great weight. So, yeah, you know, it's a good first book in that, you know, sets him up, you know, you definitely want to read more of Colin Barrett, and I hope he delivers.
Alex Bowler, Barrett's editor, Jonathan Cape, had been following his work for some time.
I first came across it actually in the pages of Stinging Fly in the journal, published by Declan Mead. I think that was about 3-4 years ago. Yeah, that's where I first saw him, and it was kind of instantly combustible.
You knew straight away?
Yeah, yeah. First paragraph of Clancy Kidd, I think it was. Yeah, had me.
And what is it about the voice that's so very vibrant, that's so very special?
It sounds really basic, but to me it's actually word choice. But it really is. You know, within the first 2 sentences there is a surprise, you know, or the right word, the unique word. And you're hooked and your eye doesn't wonder, and then, you know, beyond that, I mean, that's just what happens in the first couple of lines, but then, you know, you enter this world, you enter this environment, you're with characters who compel you, for want of a better word, and in each story there is this kind of, I think it's Colin himself has said, there is a moment of combustion, or you're kind of in the aftermath, but you feel all the power of that. So he's got power and control and energy in every sentence, you know, on the micro level, but then on the sort of wider level as well. It's extraordinary stuff.
Just after the announcement, Colin Barrett was still getting used to winning the Guardian First Book Award.
It feels great. It's a very disembodying sensation, which is exacerbated by the fact that it's occurring 31 floors up, and my ears popped on the way up, and I've been pretty lightheaded since I got here, not just because of the champagne, so...
And what does a prize like this do to a debut book, to a first book?
Well, it's at the most basic level, it's obviously validation. It's a concrete evidence that because it wasn't just a judging panel, but there was readers. So there's people out there, you know, who you have absolutely no affiliation, have no stake, and they genuinely, you know, responded to it, which is always a strange sensation, a great one, but always strange. And it is what you want when you write something. You're looking for that connection. Really, that it just sort of establishes that the book you've written has enabled that to occur. It's, you know, it's strange in a great way.
The festive season is fast approaching. So this year, while you're busy buying gifts for friends and family, why not treat yourself too? This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simple yet powerful all-in-one website building platform. With Squarespace, you can easily create your own website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. It's simple, and it'll be the one gift you know you won't want to return. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GUARDIAN to get 10% off.
Mateen led the way into Quillenin's, and I followed with the cue case, Sarah and Jenny behind. The irrelevantly elderly lined the bar, mostly fat men with dead wives, hefting pints into their bloated, drink-cudgelled faces. They did not seem to see us, certainly did not acknowledge us. We continued on into the pub's rear, into the adjoining extension, where the pool table and a pile of young skins waited. There was a game ongoing, The in-situ players saw Mateen and raised their cues. Eyes caught sight of Sarah and Jenny, and lads quickly retuned their postures, snapping into more assertive shapes. I placed the cue case on a table and hurried back into the main pub to order our group a round of Cokes and ices. Mateen did not drink when he played. The girls did as girls do, panned the room, drew inscrutable conclusions behind inviolable expressions, and click-heeled it to the sanctum of the women's toilets. Mateen flipped locks. From the case's velveteen interior, he removed the split cue parts. He screwed one end into the other and worked the joint to a seamless squeak. He dabbed a speck of oil onto a muslin cloth and swabbed down the stick. There were a dozen lads around the table. Those who were to become that night's opponents rolled shoulders, flicked fingers by their sides. Mateen addressed them. 5 spot for a one-off game, 20 for a best of 3, 50 for 5. I am in no mood for fuckery, he announced. The colour and conviction returned to his face, his voice assured, fluently cocky in this domain. Brendan Timlin went first and lost his fiver in 4 minutes. Peter Duggan next. Best of 3, gone in 2 rounds and 11 minutes. Doug Sweeney, best of 3, gone in 2 rounds and 14 minutes. So it went. An hour in, and Mateen was up 55 quid, even after the 12 cokes he'd bought me, himself, and the 2 girls. The girls, meanwhile, reappeared from the jacks midway through Mateen's second game and took a table, facing conspicuously away from the action. Jenny was leaning into Sarah's shoulder. The gaps in her teeth gleamed as she talked. Sarah was meditating on a notice board mounted on the far wall, a flock of expired circulars advertising manure storage solutions and faith-healing sessions tacked to it. The pinned circulars palpitated whenever a body went in or out of the pub's back door, and Sarah flinched with them, even though the breeze from outside was as warm as the air inside. The body of boys teetered away from Jenny and Sarah, cramping itself tight around the pool table. It was respect of a kind, this physical relinquishment of a defined space to the girls. Only I broached that space, and did so with prompt servility, replenishing the girls' cokes as required and then withdrawing. The girls produced their naggins from their handbags and liberally dosed each new glass of coke with vodka. They did not turn their heads to the games, even as the spectators grew more rowdy and voluble. Mateen, from time to time, sauntered by their table to casually disclose how smoothly things were running. Well, well done, Sarah said. It's thrilling, isn't it? Jenny said. These nights could go on forever, Sarah said. And if they did, you'd be a millionaire, boy, Jenny said. It pays these nights, Mateen said, his cue slanted against his shoulder like a marching rifle. And they just keep coming, Jenny said. They just keep coming and they go on for so long.
So how did you start chronicling the lives of Glanbey's young skins?
Well, it's the Glanbey is a fictional town in the west of Ireland. And I grew up in a... I was going to say fictional town in the west of Ireland, but... I did grow up in a town in the west of Ireland, and there are, you know, there are autobiographical correspondences, and I think there's probably, well, hopefully, the, well, they're the least interesting thing about it in a way. I mean, the surface things. It took me a long time to figure out that this is what I should write about, and that's such an obvious thing in hindsight, But I'm sort of glad I was dense for so long, and I had, I've always loved like big, grand, ambitious, risk-taking, and different. Writing that took me out of my own life and took me off to other worlds, and especially the work of a lot of big American writers, Don DeLillo, Thomas Pynch, and David Foster Wallace. Only the big stuff. So you know, when you're a young man, your early 20s, with nothing going for you but your pretensions, you think you're going to do something. You know, if you told me when I was 22 or 23, when I had absolute conviction of wanting to be a writer. But if you told me, oh, you're gonna, in a few years, you're gonna settle down and write a slim volume of short stories, you know, set in a world you're intimately familiar with, I would have said, what? There's nothing intrinsically interesting about that. But that was me projecting. That was me being stupid. And I just realized how much I don't know about where I'm from and how much I don't understand about a place I intimately understand. But there's always more you don't understand. And the more you know about a place and the more intimate you are with the place and people, often the more mystery you see latent within the parameters of what you think you know. And in my long-winded way, that's the answer. I just realized I didn't know as much about where I'm from as I thought. And once I realized that, the stories kind of flowed out of me.
Did you start writing these in Dublin or did you go back to County Mayo?
Yeah, I mean, I had a very domestic and modest form of exile from my country of origin. If my country of origin is Mayo, I went to Dublin on the other, you know, it's about 4 hours away. But nonetheless, its own way, it's a very different place. You know, it's like going halfway around the world in many respects. And you need to achieve time and distance, I think, from a place as well, to any experience in order to write with any kind of cold-bloodedness about it. I mean, you need to write with passion, but you need to write with perspective and with a sort of an achieved perspective and to see things in the round. So I wrote them all in Dublin, yeah. And the Glambé is... there's a kind of circularity because I was living on the north side near the city centre in Dublin up in Stoneybatter, and I was living off a road called Glambé Road. But I know a lot of place names in Dublin in the city were plucked from more pastoral places dotted around the country. So I don't know where the original Glambé is or if it's some sort of, you know, anglicisation of a Gaelic term, but I just called it that. It was the street I was living across from when I was writing these stories.
It's a small town. It's small enough that if you incant a body's name, then lo, they appear. But there's little of the kind of clichés of rural solidarity, of community spirit. What do they make of your fictional Glambé back in Knockmore?
Well, they're all very astute readers back there. I mean, you know, when you're writing something, there's always something at stake and you have to be a little bit nervous. And part of that was my pretension, but there was also I was scared of writing about the familiar because you could A, get it wrong, and B, you know, yeah, have it misinterpreted. I mean, I would hate, you know, if anyone thought these stories were in any way judging or talking down about it, you know, about an aspect of society. And sure, most writers are the same about anything they write about. But I didn't want to be sentimental about the town I was writing from. I didn't want to talk down to anyone, but I didn't want to talk them up either. So, you know, again, I'm talking about that cold-bloodedness, that achieved perspective. People who've read it back home, they all get it, they like it. The humour is the exact same, though. I'm glad they... And once I think you get that right, it decodes everything else for them, so they know what it's about.
There's quite a few double acts as well, kind of buddies of various sorts, so the power is sometimes a little bit different. Were you interested in looking at friendship?
Not even in rural towns, but I think... You know, there's this thing about male and female intimacy. I think a lot of men have very intimate relationships with each other, and you know, just in a, you know, in a platonic, everyday way. But it is where a lot of men end up having their intimacy, and it so much happens at a level of silence and what's not articulated. And as I wrote the stories again, there was no premeditation, but I found you're correct. Like there's a lot of double acts in it. Like there's a narrator and he's a best friend, or there's lots of pairings through most of the stories. I don't consciously know what that was about, other than, you know, they were half men. You know, they're half a person, and they have this other, they've an alter ego, or they've got a, you know, the other character is their aid or whatever. They're incomplete people, and they are. A lot of them are. A lot of they're not all tragic, but if they're tragically toned, the male characters in these books, it's because they have an idea about themselves. They have a projection of themselves. I think that's a very male thing. And they don't want to deviate from that projection, even if it's completely self-destructive.
It's a very closed world. It's a world where an escape to the city, like yours, is unimaginable as a trip to the moon. It's also a kind of very unliterary world where brain boxes swan in for the summer jobs and then swan back out again in the autumn, leaving us thick fucks in this dump, as one of the characters says, all of which makes this bleak, lyrical, literary voice of the story something of a kind of paradox.
Well, to go back to what I was talking about earlier, I mean, where I'm from, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, people are just paradoxes, they're mysteries. And some of the most brilliant people I knew, I mean, I'm talking back when I was a teenager, 14, 15, I was in awe of these fellas in my class who were just incredibly, I mean, they had a way with words, their extreme intelligence, really, great acuity, really observant, sharp, just wit for a 15-year-old. But you know, they were terrible in school. They were, you know, there was no expectation. They weren't going to go anywhere. They were just full of life. And the paradox you're kind of talking about there, yeah, I mean, a lot of these characters they're not sitting around reading novels themselves. Because I'm writing stories, and language is the only expressive tool that you have in writing. So a lot of the characters, they wouldn't express themselves in the way that some of the, obviously, the stories are written. But I didn't want to deprive them of articulacy, and articulacy is a weapon. I think it is a weapon. It is, if you're powerless, if you can still name your powerlessness, you've gone some way to reclaiming it. So that was kind of not to deprive them of the sort of the armory of expression.
So what are you working on now? Are you going to sail off into the larger reaches of the novel?
I am doing a novel. I'm attempting a novel. As you know, that's learning to walk all over again, basically. I'm continuing to write short stories as well. I'd never move away from them. But I am really interested in novel form. And my stories, for what they're worth, they are quite... They got longer as I was writing this book. And Cam with Horses is essentially a novella, one of the stories in it. So I don't pay much attention to the short in the phrase short stories. So I'm fascinated by the novel form as well, though. I think it's an incredible form. I'm really excited by my novel right now. Whether it's any good is beside the point, but I'm in it and I'm doing it. It's great, and it'll be the next thing that comes out.
The winner of the 2014 Guardian First Book Award, Colin Barrett. But what do our reading groups make of him?
I'm really pleased for him that he won. I think that was well deserved, and I can't wait to see what he writes next.
What do you think it's going to be?
Maybe some more short stories. I'm not sure. I think he spoke about writing something longer that he engaged more in for a longer period of time. But I'd be interested to see anything that he wrote, to be honest. I thought they were all really good.
Absolutely delighted. Has a real sense of time and place.
And how about yourself?
Oh, that was my favourite all the way through. I loved it. I'm so pleased.
What do you think he's going to do next?
Whatever it is, it'll be terrific. Yeah, he shows real promise. Yeah.
I think his writing's so powerful and lyrical and dramatic and sad, and it's got everything you want. Beautiful.
We'll be back in the studio next week for more literary discussion. Find us by searching for Guardian Books Podcast. You can listen online, follow us on SoundCloud, or subscribe via iTunes. Until then, from me, Richard Lee, and our producer, Eva Krizyak, thanks for listening.